Tum, you, Eva, certainly, Anucharan, serving, Narantara, always, Prashanta, pacified, Nishesha, all, Manarata, desires, Anjana, other, Kada, when, Aham, I, Aikantika, exclusive, Nitya, eternal, Kinkara, servant, Praharshayishyami, I shall become joyful, Sanata, with a fitting master, Jivatam, living. By serving you constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Purport. In his teachings to Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared every living entity to be an eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the constitutional position of all living entities. Just as a dog or servant is very much satisfied to get a competent, perfect master, or as a child is completely satisfied to possess a competent father, so the living entity is satisfied by completely engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. He thereby knows that he has a competent master to save him from all kinds of danger. Unless the living entity comes to the guaranteed protection of the Supreme Lord, he is full of anxiety. This life of anxiety is called material existence. To be completely satisfied and devoid of anxiety, one must come to the position of eternally rendering service to the Supreme Lord. This verse is also from the Stotra Ratna by Sri Yamunacharya. Translation again. Repeat after me. By serving you constantly, one is free from all material desires and is completely satisfied, pacified. When you're pacified, you'll also be satisfied. When shall I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is emotional verse. Actually, all verses in the Shastra are very emotional. But with our polluted material conditioning, we can't sense the spiritual emotions that are bubbling through these shlokas. For example, Srimad Bhagavatam. Every shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, every syllable is saturated with Krishna praying. But with our contaminated senses, we don't pick that up in the beginning. Oh, there are always these moments when the sun shines through and you get a glimpse of the majesty and sweetness of Krishna consciousness. But we should hear these verses and contemplate them, understanding that we're not penetrating to the depths. Indeed, the depths are unlimited. I recommended all of you try reading Srila Prabhupada's books for emotional satisfaction. And you'll notice your heart begins to vibrate and resonate with spiritual emotions. Everyone wants a heart that expands. Everyone wants emotional fulfillment. Who would ever think that simply by reading Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita with the proper heart approach that you'll obtain emotional fulfillment? Most never dream of such thing. Most think the Bhagavatam is one thing, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, but my heart is another thing. I need my own program for pacifying my heart and my own arrangements. Don't get me wrong, I believe in Krishna. And I do accept that there is such a thing as devotional service. It should be done by someone. But when it comes to my heart, that's something else. I've got to deal with that myself, according to my own program. What else can be done? You have a heart, I have a heart, it belongs to us. We all accept, you know, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Kijai. But as far as my heart, oh, that is something that I have to consider. When we think like that, we never consider that bhakti yoga is the perfection of the expansive heart, heart fulfillment. That is completely the program of Shukadev Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. They're aiming at your head and heart combined. So what is that attitude we have when we think it's my business to satisfy my heart, my way? That is stated in this verse. Manorata. Manoratantara. The manufacturing process of the mind. As long as that goes on, there's never any prasanta. You'll not be pacified. The mind constantly just manufactures ways that you're going to be happy. Have you taken a survey of your mind's operations during the day? You can keep a diary. I recommend this. All the plans the mind comes up with to make you happy. Right? Your mind talks to you throughout the day. If you only do this, then you'll be happy. If you just make this adjustment, you'll finally get what you want. Right? All day long, the mind is just grinding away. In this way, we suffer. Although there is an appearance that there's going to be satisfaction. You know, sometimes in the morning, you see the sunrise, and you may think, soon we're going to feel the full glory of the sun. And then what happens? Clouds. Has that ever happened in Melbourne? Yeah. The sun is rising, and you think, here comes the sun, here comes a nice day. And then clouds everywhere. The wind blows in the clouds so quickly. So that's what happens when you have this manorata, this manufacturing process in your mind, which fabricates all these foolish ways that you're going to be pacified and happy and fulfilled. So you should keep a diary of how the mind does this, and then study this diary. Every week, go back over the weekly performance of your mental factory. You'd be shocked at what it's concocted. It goes from one thing to another so quickly. Take a look at it after a month. Or even what's really embarrassing, take a look after a few years. You're just shocked. Gosh, I thought that. 4 years ago, I thought if I did that, I would be happy. But that person? Then you really see the power of this mental factory. Which is manufacturing ways that your heart is going to be satisfied. Never do we dream that heart satisfaction is the specific focus of Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion. So often I see devotees sitting in class and their heads may be alert, their mind may be alert, but their heart is turned off. Often not even their mind is alert. Often the mind is somewhere else and the heart is closed off. So in this way, you don't get the full benefit, the full impact. Of course, transcendental sound vibration is so powerful that even if you're sitting in the room and not paying attention, some nectar will still sprinkle over you. But we want the full impact. That means we have to listen with attentive mind and open heart. You gather in that sound vibration into your mind and into your heart. It's like when you do Qigong. If any of you know anything about this, Qigong is just the Chinese system of prana. In China it's called Qi, in India it's called prana. So the whole purpose is to gather that subtle prana energy into your chakras. So you do various exercises to push the subtle energies into your chakras. Nothing spiritual about it, of course, it's just subtle materialism, but it's good for health. But similarly, our transcendental system is to gather the spiritual sound vibration into our head, into our heart, and then we become rejuvenated. But so many devotees think that my heart is my business. Okay, teach me the beliefs of Krishna consciousness. Teach me the catechism. Catholics, any of you Catholics know there's a catechism. Anglicans, they also have a catechism. No churchgoers here. Yeah? Do Anglicans have a catechism? No. But you have this creed you recite? Yes? I believe in... Yes. You know it? Right. So, if you approach Krishna consciousness in that way, there'll be benefit, but it won't be very big. And your spiritual progress back to Godhead will take a long time, many verse and days. But if you are ready to soak up the nectar with your heart and your mind combined, then you are able to be rejuvenated and nourished. When you're rejuvenated and nourished, you're protected against Maya. So let's look at this verse more. It's often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. This is a joyful exclamation. When will I always think of Krishna? When will I always be engaged in Krishna's service? This is the emotional outcry of Sri Yamunacharya, one of our Vaishnava acharyas. Your heart likes to do that. Everyone's heart likes to be free and expansive. You don't like to have a bound-up heart that's locked up in a chamber. But you're so beat down by material experience that you keep your heart sealed off. But there's still hope that your heart will be satisfied in material life. But here, Yamunacharya is beckoning. Come on, open that heart up. Exult. When will I always be engaged in Krishna's service? That is freedom. Freedom on the spiritual plane. On the material plane, it's impossible to get that expansiveness that your heart wants. Try to understand. This is where you're really at. Your heart wants to expand without barriers. But every time you try to invest your heart in material situations, you get the promise of wide open horizons, but there's always a wall blocking you. And that's what frustrates you. Your loving propensity is curtailed. It hits so many barriers. And then you have these scars on your heart, and so you just remain pent up, suspicious of Krishna, as if Krishna did it all. Sometimes, especially these days, there are many women, they've been mistreated by men, and so they just close off their heart, and in fact, some of them, they'll even become gay because, you know, that's it for men. You know, they did this to me, they did that. No more men. I know one devotee. His parents were wealthy and, you know, seemed like a nice family, affluent family. His mother went away with one of the sons for a vacation to Hong Kong or something like that. And when she got back, she found that her husband had an affair with her sister. So that just totally blew her out. She said, no more men. So that was the end of the marriage. She didn't want any more men. So now she's a professed gay person, which is acceptable these days. So and she takes care of her kids and lives with her partner. This goes on. This is what the living entity does when you have trauma for your heart, which must be there in material life. There must be trauma. I remember myself. I was a very happy kid. I thought with ideal family, and I would go to church and Sunday school every Sunday and memorize Bible verses and full kid's life, sports and this and that. And I'd always look around the neighborhood and see parents, families where their parents are having problems. I would feel so proud. I just see my family's very good, yeah. Then when I was 12 years old, I would, because the family had like a, what's called a, they call a finished basement, you know, it's, what do you call it here, where the basement of the house is built, is up, renovated and made into living facilities. Anyway, so I would come down, because that's where the kitchen and living area was, so I would come down through there to go to school in the morning and out the back door, and then I would see my father sleeping on the couch. So, you know, I just didn't think anything of it, you know, because he's, you know, working different hours as administrator in the police department. So I didn't think anything of it. And then after, you know, it kept happening. And as I walked by, he would kind of mumble his sleep, son, whatever happens, remember I love you. What's all this stuff, you know? You know, dad's getting a little bit sentimental or something. You know, he never said anything like that before. So, yeah, and then one day, my mother told me, you know, all your relatives are coming. You know, they're going to take you to the country for the summer. And so, you know, all the aunties and uncles piled in, you know, drove in from, you know, from afar, you know. And then they told me, you know, your father and mother, you know, they're separating. Your father has other plans. He was tired of your mother pouring his whiskey down the drain all the time and throwing out his Playboy magazines. And so he's got himself a new number. So I was like, hit me like out of the clear, like, ah. And my mother had just given birth to my youngest brother. In fact, the whole scene had happened while she was pregnant. And I remember she told me something which I never had to apply. She said, don't you remember this? Never, ever cheat on a woman when she's pregnant. The other thing she told me, which I never had a chance to apply either, when she was expecting my youngest brother and she was, you know, swollen up, I was just 12 years old. I didn't know any better. So I walked by her one day and just laughed. How she looked. So she took me aside and said, I want to tell you one thing. You better remember it. If you want peace in this life, never laugh at a woman when she's pregnant. Didn't have a chance to apply that one either. So. In any case, the point is, trauma hits us, and then our heart becomes scarred. We seal ourselves off. Unconsciously, many of us are doing that in Krishna consciousness. We want material relief. So we come and accept the theology of Krishna consciousness, the mental beliefs, as we take them. They're not mental beliefs, but we take them that way. we go to the Bhakti Shastri course, we want to soak up the theology. Of course, it's very purifying. But my point is, we don't understand what's fully going on with the Shravanam Kirtanam process. What's fully going on is that there's an opportunity for unlimited heart expansion. But we don't think of it that way. Therefore, I see so many devotees. They get into this thing, yeah, I know, I really like the philosophy. But it's just, what about my heart? My heart is crying out for something. My heart is crying out for fulfillment, for emotional expansion. Well, what do you think Yamunacharya is doing? His heart is pumping out the bhakti. By serving you constantly, one is free from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? This is a heart pumping out the devotional ecstasy. You can try it. When you're during kirtan, when you're dancing in front of the deities, you can just jump, when will I be joyful having such a, by being your permanent eternal servant, having such a fitting master? Or you can come in during the day and come before the deities and express your heart. There's no law that you can't come before the deities when there's not a program going on. I also notice devotees have this notion that you come to see the deities when there's a deity greeting, when there's a class, otherwise you stay away. There's a lost art in ISKCON that you can pop in and see the deities anytime during the day and express your heart. The best way to express your heart before the deities is to quote the verses of the topmost lovers of Krishna. Because Krishna likes that the best. Then you can offer some heartfelt expression of your own. It's best not to, in the lower stages of bhakti, to come before the deities and just, you know, pour out your thoughts and emotions as if they're no better lovers of Krishna than you. Think about it. I know it's maybe a little difficult to understand. It's part of devotional humility to recognize that there are better devotees who know how to express the very things I'm feeling in a much better way, in a tasty way for Krishna. So let me recite their prayers. Then, as you advance in bhakti, because of your service, your own expressions, the form of them will be more pleasing to Krishna. A good way to do it is do both. You can present a verse. You can learn this verse by Yamunacharya and recite that before the deities, an appropriate verse to express your heart's condition. And then you can add your own content also. I remember there's one painter, one of my godbrothers, he's an artist, and he was painting the wall outside Mayapur with various paintings from Chaitanya Leela. And he started putting his own words at the bottom of the paintings, devotional, you know, inspirations. So Srila Prabhupada was touring Mayapur, and he was looking at the outside wall, and he saw, what is this? What is this? The devotees explained, the artist had written his own, like, devotional thoughts glorifying the Lord and his devotees. And Prabhupada explained, he should not dare. In other words, at his stage, he should put down some shlokas like that, relevant to the scene, but he should not think he's such a great devotee that whatever he thinks and says is so noteworthy for the whole world. And Srila Prabhupada, as always, was very prescient. Later, unfortunately, that devotee rejected Krishna consciousness, Sampradaya, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasi Thakur, Bhakti Lo Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada. And went off with Babaji's and considered that he was on the perfectional platform. And so, this is a way we can be personal with Krishna in an obvious way. During the day,
You have some problem? Pop in before the deities. Express yourself. Or you can just pop in and look at the deities and stare at them. You can't do that to anyone else in this world. But that you can do with Krishna. And there's an authorized way to stare at Krishna. You begin with the feet. And then you study the nails. You perceive the effulgence coming from the nails of Krishna's toes. You try to smell the sandalwood paste and the tulsi leaves on the lotus feet of the Lord. And then you raise your vision, the calves and thighs, to the lotus navel. Yes, you can just meditate on the navel of the Lord. This is real beauty. Who else do you know who has a navel that's glorified for being beautiful? You can study your own navel and see, is it a work of art? But what is Krishna known as? Pankajanabha, Aravindanabha, the lotus-like navel of the Lord. So you can meditate on Krishna's navel. Sometimes in the summer, the navel is showing. Yes, you can just stare. Then you raise your vision to the chest. And then to the hands, lotus hands holding the flute. Again, the fingernails radiating effulgence. The neck. The face, the eyes, the hair, curling black hair surrounding the lotus face, the peacock feather. How did Lord Chaitanya describe Krishna's beauty to Sanatan Goswami? First, think of the ornaments of the Lord. The ornaments of the Lord are caressing his body, but it is the body of the Lord that's making the ornaments beautiful. As you all know, that is Uddhava's comment in the third canto of Bhagavatam. We've explained it so many times, how the Lord wears ornaments to make the ornaments look beautiful. So, more beautiful than the ornaments is the body of the Lord. Then enhancing the beautiful body of the Lord is the tribhanga, the threefold bending stance. Therefore, another name for Krishna is Tribhangananda, the bliss of standing in a threefold posture. But above the beauty of the threefold bending posture is the beauty of Krishna's face. Sweeter than the beauty of Krishna's face is the beauty of his smile. And then there are Krishna's eyes, which move mysteriously back and forth, and then like arrows pierce the mind of the gopis, and cause the mind of the gopis to be agitated. So you can look at Krishna and think in this way. Just come in during the day before the deities and stare. This is the only person you can do that. I don't think, even those of you who are married, you just can't stare at your husband or wife all day, can you? You beta Priya, can you do it? No. Hey, clean the house. Do something, you know. Yeah, make some prasad. Look at me. Vrindaranya, can you do it? Can you just stare at Dandakaranya all day? You probably could, huh? Could you handle it? Yes. He says he can't handle it. But Krishna, you can do that too. Krishna will never protest. You can, during the day, there's no law in the temple. I don't think the president has made any rules that you can't pop in during the day and stare at the deities. They're there for you. You're having a problem. You know, your mind has manufactured something, the manorata, the chariot of the mind is running this way and that way. Come before the deities and present yourself. especially if you recite shlokas to the deities, and then you can get a bit freestyle. But it's a recommended devotional practice to come before the deity and recite prayers. I remember this is something I did immediately as a new devotee. I had read that in Nectar Devotion. Whenever you come before the deity, you should recite some prayers, notable shlokas by great devotees of the Lord. So I had my two prayers, which I offered to the Lord, to the deities, which I felt were specially applicable. One was the famous prayer by Rupa Goswami. I know young boys have attraction for young girls. I was just 22 then. Young girls have attraction for young boys. I'm simply praying to you, Krishna, that my mind will be attracted to you in the same spontaneous way. So every morning as a new bhakta, I'd come before the deities and recite that prayer. And yeah, no, it's working. I'm still working today. And the other prayer was one, I think it was by Prahlad Maharaj, that those who are rendering devotional service are first-class experts in the matter of satisfying the self. Because as a young lad, I always envisioned myself as like a New York enjoyer, you know, who knew where all the pleasure was, and you know, not only New York, but Manhattan, living in Manhattan, the center of it all. So I always prided myself on knowing where the best pleasure is. So I figured, yeah, I'll learn this verse. This is really where I'm at. Those who render service to Krishna are first-class experts in their self-interest. Yeah, this makes sense, right? So, you can come before the deity and recite the prayers by Queen Kunti, the real liberated woman. She's the best feminist. She's Krishna's dear devotee. So you can do that during the day. Just come before the deity. Just take in how the deity is decorated. Do you ever discuss that amongst yourselves? Did you see what Krishna's wearing today? Just come in, stare, ogle, look. Let your eyes run over the forms of the Lord. I was mentioning this in one temple, and kind of one brash young devotee who kind of had a material conception, and he was one. Sometimes he's afflicted by thinking that sadhana isn't really necessary. You just gotta serve, and you know. The best devotees are the ones who have material abilities, you know, all this kind of, you know, hearing and chanting stuff. It's for the wimps, the hearing and chanting. So, after I gave the class, devotees during the day started to do that. They just started to pop into the temple and just stare at the deities. So, I was told this devotee commented, it's all just sex desire. So, I heard that, and I commented back to him indirectly, even if it's true, so what? That's bona fide. If you say they're just coming to see the deity, you know, afflicted by sex desire, then that is the bona fide solution, to stare at Krishna's body. So the prophet explained that the deity worship is mainly, especially for householders, so that they can, you know, deal with the form of the Lord and in this way become free from the bodily conception. So, okay, if you say they're just coming motivated by sex desire to stare at the deity, still, it's bona fide. They can stare at Krishna's angas, Krishna's limbs, and become purified from the attraction to material forms. So either way you want to take it, whatever level, on up to pure love of Krishna, come and stare at Krishna. Try it. It's an enlivening process. You just look. Look at his feet. Look at that waist. Look at those eyes. Look at the shape of those hands. How does he hold a flute like this? Try it. And then you're afflicted by something. Someone in the temple has minimized your glories. Someone tried to engage you in devotional service and didn't make the request completely nice. Mortal wounds. Of course, we should try to talk to devotees properly. Not simply, Prabhu! Prabhu! Prabhu means master. If you actually think what you're saying, how can you say, Prabhu, you didn't do such and such. Sometimes also, you know, I've heard ladies address their husbands when they're really ticked off. Prabhu! I know it doesn't happen here, but other temples I've heard like that. Prabhu! So, we should try to deal with devotees very nicely and gently. If you are in a superior position of devotional stature, then you can be firm, but no need to be nasty or irritated or like that. So sometimes we feel that, you know, there's been some problem in our social relations with devotees. There's been misunderstanding. It does happen. Then come before the deities and express yourself. Don't just lock it up in your heart. That's normally what we do, right? You just put that person on your list. And preferably you try to find a few fellow devotees who you can, you know, talk about it, you know, and get sympathy. What do you think about such and such, Das or Dasi? Right? That's what the Association of Devotees is for. That you can... Have you been thinking the same thing I've been thinking about that, Prabhu? It's a bit too much, isn't it? He or she is a bit over the top, right? Yeah, I knew you'd agree with me. That's why you're my friend. Then you keep it locked up inside, and you tell your friends, and then sometimes even the little click forms, you know, a few devotees have the same understanding against another devotee. Psh, what do you think? You know, it was wrong the way I was treated, right? Psh, yeah. I remember, and then the other person tells you, I remember 5 years ago when that devotee did the same thing to me. Ooh. Right? That's how it works. Yeah, this is our version of International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I recommend, instead of that, come before the deity and just let it out. Like, oh, I didn't feel like I should be treated like that. I'm your servant. Better at first you can preface all that with some authorized prayer. This is a nice one. When will I always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Meanwhile, let me tell you about... So at least this, you're offering some path upwards, you know? So, let's look again at what Yamunacharya is saying. He's exulting. When will I always be Krishna conscious? Without any partition between material activities and spiritual activities. When will I be fully engaged in hearing and chanting about Krishna? Narantara, without stop. When will I be joyful upon my mental factory shutting down? When that mental factory shuts down and no longer manufactures plans for material happiness, then I'll have prashanta, I'll be prashanatma, truly satisfied, peaceful. Kadaham aikantika nitya kinkara. Nitya kinkara means eternal servant. This is hard to understand in conditioned life, how you'll be so fulfilled being an eternal servant. Everyone in the material world wants the emotion of being the master. But Yamunacharya is teaching us, aspire to be the eternal permanent servant of Krishna. Aikantika, with no other motivation. Simply to be Krishna's servant. That's all. That's your only aspiration. When will that time come? You see, you have to be protected. Sanata jivatam. Sanata means with a master. Anatta, not anartha, but anatta means without a master. You know the example given by Srila Prabhupada, the street dog example. They have street dogs in Melbourne, or the SPCA is very quick. But sometimes you've seen street dogs, yes? No, you haven't. In Calcutta, yes, you have seen Delhi. You look at them and like, what is this creature doing? You know, they're all, their hair is spotty, and some spots in their body are pink from disease, and their tongue is hanging out, and it's, ugh, what is this? The dog just has no protector, no steady supply of food. But think about it. That is our position in the material world, separate from Krishna. But we dress ourselves nicely with jewelry, cosmetics, and fashion, and we feel so good to be an independent street dog in the material world. You're an independent street dog driving a Beamer, and you feel so good. You feel content. Money in the bank. Nice home. Yes, this is all right. The curtain of Maya prevents you from seeing. You're a straggly street dog without Krishna's protection. Now, the other example Srila Prabhupada gives, also, you can think about the emotions and satisfaction felt by a child laying on the lap of the mother. This is why ladies like to have children. That those first years when the child is so dependent and attains its satisfaction just by laying on the mother's lap. These are the moments the mother never forgets. Even when the kid is 53, my mother still thinks of it. Yeah, that's that dependency. She always says, even now, I remember when you were just a wee little thing on my lap. Just that reciprocation with an entity who's completely dependent and is so obviously pacified just by laying on your lap. Ah, oh, these are the magic golden moments of life, never to be forgotten. But that is an example. The acharyas used to show how we feel when properly situated under the shelter of Krishna. Just like a baby immediately is content in spite of any disturbance to be on the lap of the mother. This is our sanata situation. Sanata jivatam. Living with a fitting master. The whole training given by the guru, the whole training given by Srila Prabhupada's institution is for the purpose of teaching how we can live life with the fitting master, Lord Krishna, and his service. We need training how to live as a servant. I've said quite a few times, if you tell your parents, I'm here at the Mahaprabhu Mandir undergoing training as a servant. What would they say? They'd be horrified. My boy, my girl being trained as a servant. But to be trained as Krishna's servant, that is the highest occupation in all of existence. So, Yamunacharya is exclaiming, when will I always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Now, do you really think that Krishna is a fitting master? Or do you have some grudge against Krishna? Just think about it in your heart honestly. Are you holding some kind of grudge? Krishna, why did you do this to me? I was your completely surrendered servant, and then this happened. I fully surrendered, well, almost, for 2 whole years, and then... Think about it. Are you holding some grudge against Krishna? Or shall you adopt the position of Yamunacharya? When will I be joyful to have such a fitting master? Fitting master means Krishna takes care of us so wondrously. You can see that in the Leela with Sudama Vipra. We'll start that Leela from when Sudama was leaving the palace of Rukmini. He had spent the night there, and he had felt like he'd gone back to Godhead. So next morning, he left, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that Krishna Dwarkadish accompanied Sudama Vipra by foot part of the way through the city as he was leaving to go back to his home somewhere else. The Lord, who is Vishva Bhavana, the maintainer of the whole universe, and he's Swasukha, he's got his own happiness within him. He doesn't have to go outside for his happiness. Yet that same Lord, the self-sufficient, self-satisfied maintainer of the universe, he accompanied Sudama Vipra. You've done that with a friend. You've accompanied them to their car when they're leaving your house or something like that. This is what Krishna did. He's the fitting master. And when he finally parted from Sudama Vipra, Krishna offered his obeisances and then went back to his palace. So this is why Yamunacharya exclaims, when will I always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? So what was Sudama Vipra thinking as he was walking home? He was too shy to ask the Lord for any material support, although his wife had sent him there for that reason. His wife was correct. He had a very good Vaishnavi wife. She knew, you're a grahastha, you have to have some economic support. Krishna will understand that. But Sudama was thinking, All right, I'll go see Krishna. Not so much for asking for any material support, but I'll just go to see Krishna. Yeah. That's the goal of life. So he was thinking in that way. His wife was thinking, even if he doesn't ask Krishna for anything, because Krishna is the Lord of the Yadus, as we discussed yesterday, he's Yadupati. Some of the subordinate kings under Krishna will give my husband some material support. She had that faith. So she was right. Both were right. It's an example of good teamwork, husband and wife teamwork in Krishna consciousness. So, Sudama's walking home now, and he's thinking, how glorious my Lord is. Why is my Lord glorious? He didn't give me anything. Think about that. Can you glorify Krishna for not giving you anything? This is Sudama Vipra. How glorious my Lord is. He knew that if he just gave me a tiny bit of wealth, I'd become intoxicated and fall down. So he didn't give me anything. How great my Lord is. Kijai. This is bhakti. Totally different from material experience. If you go see someone, they didn't give you anything. You get ticked off. You get angry. But Sudama Vipra, he's glorifying how wonderful my Lord is. He is Brahmanya Dev. He's the well-wished of all the Brahmanas. It's so obvious. He's taking care of me. I have such a fitting master. How glorious this is. Truly, he's Brahmanya Dev. He's Deva Deva, the Lord of all the demigods. He's Vipradev. He's the Lord of the Brahmanas. And look how he's treated me, such a fallen person. He's the Lord of the demigods, Deva Deva, but he treated me just like a demigod. He massaged my feet. He sat me on the bed of his favorite consort, and she fanned me. This is what Sudama Vipra is thinking. This is his emotional state of joy. What a fitting master I have. That Lord embraced me with his own arms. He embraced me to his chest, the chest that's the abode of Sri, the goddess of fortune. What is this? This is so amazing. This is what Sudama Vipra was thinking. Not, I didn't get anything. In fact, as we said, he glorified Krishna. He's such a perfect master, he knows not to give me anything. I would have fallen down with just a little bit of material wealth. And then he quoted that verse that Lord Chaitanya also quoted to Sanatana Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Who am I? Let's think about who I am. The poor, sinful friend of a Brahmana. Poor, sinful Brahmabandhu. And who is he? He's Sri Niketan. He's the abode of all opulence, the abode of all wealth. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet he embraced me and treated me as his own personal associate. This is Sudama Vipra's emotional expression, full of knowledge, full of bliss. Who am I? And who is he? Yet what happened? He embraced me. Sri Niketan embraced me. Held me to his chest. That very chest that's the abode of the goddess of fortune. He is truly Brahmanyadev. It can be seen by everyone. So what happened as he was approaching his home? He saw a big effulgence. So he began to, what is this effulgence? What's going on? Approaching his neighborhood and he sees this celestial effulgence emanating. Then as he got closer, he saw some palaces. He said, whose home is this? Then as he got even closer, he saw, this is the site of my house. But how has the transformation come about? So then, as celestial maidservants and approached him, he understood. Krishna wants me to have this. So he accepted that, the servants, he accepted all the opulence. Still, his attitude was always humble. He thought, I'm not like Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj can live with all this opulence and not be affected. That's not where I'm at. I've always got to be careful to think I'm the humble servant of Krishna. Then I'll be able to use all this opulence for Krishna's pleasure. The Lord wants me to have it. I'll accept it. And what was Krishna thinking in Dwarka? When Krishna had snatched the cheap rice offering of Sudama Vipra and ate one handful, Krishna was thinking, this bhakti is so wonderful. I can't repay it. I feel embarrassed. I better not give him something when he's right in front of my face because I feel so embarrassed. I cannot adequately reciprocate. Better wait till he gets home. He'll see a surprise. This is Krishna feeling inadequate in front of his devotee's devotion. Like, all my wealth cannot compare with the bhakti in this palm full of cheap rice. This is reality. This is the real world. The Lord saying, all my opulence can't compare to the devotion of the offering of cheap rice that I got from this Brahmana. I don't know how to repay him. Let him go home and see a big surprise. I don't want to try to reciprocate to his face because I can't reciprocate enough. This is bhakti, our sublime eternal activity. Any questions? Yes.
Sometimes we're dealing with issues like parents divorcing or things that happen to us in our childhood. Even as devotees, it's not just things that, but we're not aware of it. You know, or we become aware of it as we as things are uncovered. Is it all right to bring those things to Krishna as well? Or ask even to be made aware of some of, you know, things that we're not aware of. That's why some of the time we're not, you know, things are so complicated, we just don't, we can't see the end of it.
The Lord in Bhagavad Gita promises what he's going to do for you, since he is the fitting master, as Yamunacharya so jubilantly explains. Krishna says, Tesham evanukam vardam aham gyanajam tamah nasayami atma bhavasta gyana dipena vasvata. Out of compassion for my servants, I from within the heart of the devotee turn on the gyana deep, the torchlight of knowledge, so you can see all these complexities in your heart. Seeing those complexities is half the way to victory. Seeing the enemy allows you to take precise aim. So Krishna says, I'll do that for you. If you're actually my devotee, I'll let you see what's going on in your heart. I'll illuminate the whole situation. Just like, you know, the advanced militaries of the world now, they all have these infrared scopes so they can see at night and get their job done. So, similarly, Krishna will do better. He'll let you see those things. But we have to be a real devotee. And practically speaking, not everyone is chanting Hare Krishna with that amount of sincerity, and they're not engaging in devotional service with that amount of sincerity. So therefore, in the interim, you may have to rely on material means of counseling. We have to be practical. Srila Prabhupada said this himself in his last year with us. Not everyone is chanting Hare Krishna with that kind of dedication. So therefore, some support is required. There's no doubt the holy name will do everything. But is everyone taking shelter of the holy name in that way? You can't expect to get that result by just casual chanting. There'll be some benefit, but the process will be slow. So therefore, we have to be practical, especially now. So many persons are coming to Krishna consciousness from just atrocious backgrounds, which are considered to be normal these days. I was discussing with Gurjan Prabhu how in one city, some young lady devotees, they were just telling me, what's the norm these days? I just kind of asked. I said, well, yeah, how many boyfriends have you had? Because they came to Krishna consciousness when they were 16. And so they were telling me how between the ages of 14 and 16, they just did it up, did the town up like everybody else does. I said, well, what does that mean? You know, I always like to stay in tune with what's going on. So, one told me, well, I wasn't so bad. Between the ages of 14 and 16, I only had 8 partners. 8 partners means the full works. Only 8. No, I wasn't so bad. So the numbers went from 8 on up to 18 in 2 years. What does that do to the mind? So, if you're preaching Krishna consciousness, this is the reality you're dealing with. I remember I think it was 2 years ago or last year here, I was speaking about the New Zealand norm that when a girl is 14, she can bring her boyfriend home to spend the weekend with her. And the parents consider that's, it's very cultured and aristocratic. Pucker. Yeah. Why should our daughter be just running the streets when she can do this in our home, in safe home atmosphere? So, remember, I was right here in the class explaining that. And somebody, I don't know if the person, the devotee is still here, he raised his hand and he said, Maharaj, my family was not like that. Maharaj, my family was very strict. When my sister's boyfriend spent the weekend, they had to stay in the living room together. They couldn't stay in her room together. Remember that? Anybody remember? Yeah, it happened right here. Why, 3 years ago. My parents were strict. We have a strict home. He could not stay in her room with her. He had to. They both stayed in the living room at night. Very strict. So this is the... this is what we're dealing with. No one remembers that? You don't remember, Casey? I remember. No one was here? Sunday, Zach, do you remember?
I remember you telling that here.
Yeah. Yes. It happened here. I never forgot it. Maharaj. So, this is the kind of times we're dealing with. The men are so weak-minded. They think it's such great fun having heaps of illicit sex, and they've just destroyed their intelligence. This is what we're dealing with. Physical health is so bad. You can read in Lilamrita how Prabhupada's disciples did so many powerful things in their 20s. One of the reasons why it's difficult to get that now is because people are so weak in their 20s because of sinful activity in their teenage years. You can't have all that intoxication and illicit sex without a huge effect. And the reaction comes, it starts coming in your 20s. You don't have any vitality, no vigor, no focus. If you've been watching video games all day for 8 years. Yeah. Yes. I have one disciple in New Zealand. He, between the ages of 8 and 16, he became a devotee when he was 16. Between 8 and 16, he played video games 8 hours a day. Can you imagine what that does to your mind? And it so happened. What was his favorite video game? One called some kind of auto theft game. And whenever you would run over, the prime goal of the game was you steal a car and then run over Hare Krishnas. It's so horrible. And so, and every time with your stolen car you run over a Hare Krishna, the whole video game explodes and lights up. Gauranga! So this was his favorite game. He would just love to run over devotees and shout, Gauranga! Gauranga! That's a true story. Day after day he just played this game. Yeah. And gather all his friends around. I'm going to run over those Hare Krishnas. Run them over. Gauranga! Gauranga! So then one day he came to one of our lofts. And devotees were, it was late at night. Devotees were having kirtan with a few guests. And someone started chanting Nittai Gauranga. And he just leaped with joy. I found it! I found Gauranga! It was his favorite video game. He could never figure out why he became so joyous chanting Gauranga every time he ran over the Hare Krishnas. Then when he heard the kirtan, I found it. I found Gauranga. It's a true story. So anyway, this is what's going on these days. So we have to be sympathetic and realize that not everyone's going to chant Hare Krishna with the concentration and dedication and devotion required that all their material problems will be solved in that way. I've calculated that 50% of the people who come to Krishna consciousness these days outside of India, 50% require psychological counseling and 80% require medical help. Yeah. because of what they've done to themselves in their teenage years. This is the reality. Anything else? Yes, these things require thought. Nevertheless, the absolute fact is there. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, everything is solved. To keep us focused on taking that medicine, Baba Ocean, the cure against the repetition of birth and death. To keep us focused, we require the association of devotees to support us and keep us concentrated on taking that medicine. It's a grand endeavor Srila Prabhupada has established, so we'll all take the medicine of the holy name. All glory, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.